This recording is an interview of Ram Dass made on May 10, 1980 in Eugene, Oregon. The interviewer is Amit Goswami, an Indian-born physicist.
It seems that you have been with a person who have been like our electrons in some way, because electrons are acausal. We have known that since 1930s, actually. Quantum mechanics is a theory which indeed puts the electrons quite respectfully in their, accepts them in their acausality, so to say. And here we are with gurus whom also we are forced to accept in their acausal behavior. But of course, the problem that people have is that there are only few of these gurus. So for electrons, we can always
plenty of them.
Plenty of that.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know that we are ready for them anyway, or that we would know what to do about them. It's interesting. I've often been approached by, when my guru was in his body prior to 1973, I've been approached by Western scientists who have said, we would like to go and study your guru. Now, to me, I just, every time I think of that, I almost laugh inside, because my guru, for him, to be studied, it's like, it's somehow in my mind, it's like an elephant being studied by an ant. I would like to honor Western science, but I realize that it isn't measurable that way. It has to come from a great deal more humility than that. And it's lacking in Western science at this point, to really open to what that phenomenon is of a guru in the East.
Yes, I'll put it in a slightly different way, which is that in order to go into this venture, a scientist has to become scientists really have to become disciples. That is, they have to start to use their body as a laboratory of whatever they're trying to find. And in that place, probably, like if you were studying, you know, if you were a physicist or the scientist who wanted to study Maharaji, you could, right? And you did to some extent.
I
Your
did.
Books make it very clear that, that you were studying him behaviorally.
Exactly. But that is, there are two interesting associations to what you just said. One was Carl Jung's eulogy of Richard Wilhelm, Wilhelm, who did the I Ching. He translated the I Ching originally. And he went to another culture, and as Carl Jung pointed out, he was a, he brought the culture back in his bloodstream, in his being, not in his knowing, but his being. He became the culture itself, and then came back and made that work, functioned as what Carl called a Gnostic intermediary of somebody who brought, who moved from one to the other. But Carl Jung then points out, but it finally drove him insane because he couldn't integrate the two systems. And it is insane as long as you try to hold to one or the other. You've got to let go of both in order to become something that is more than either of them. That's the first point. The other one was that I remember when I was at Harvard, and we were being criticized for our research with chemicals that alter consciousness. And the criticism was from a behaviorist point of view, that we weren't being sufficiently stringent in our behaviorist criteria. And Tim Leary, my partner at that time, argued that we were doing traditional introspection research, which had a history in psychology, although it's not in vogue in the behaviorist zeitgeist. And I remember at that point, I realized my predicament, and I said to the group, I'm making a different decision. I'm not pleading that I am any longer functioning in the formal role of being a scientist. I am going to go the journey, and what will come out will come out. I must be now considered a datum, right? And you may study me if you choose, but I can't keep one foot in the door to come back and keep observing what's happening to me. I've got to let it happen and then hope it comes out. I may just go insane, I don't know, but I've got to keep going. And that was really a basic decision in my life, as I recall.
You decided to be what quantum mechanics tells us all the time, that is, there is no division between subjects and objects.
Exactly.
Why try?
Why try? That the dualistic mind is a limiting factor in our understanding of the universe, even though it seems to have tremendous power. It's like prehensile ability. It gives us a lot of power, but it's only one kind of power. And it's a very trivial kind of power in a certain way in the larger domain of power. The question is how we can use intuitive understanding in any systematic fashion.
That's right. And then the question will, bigger question will come, that if we could, then would we get into powers from which there is no return and new catastrophe starts happening?
Yeah.
I have heard this worry that if the miraculous were accepted and people could do them, then what would happen to the world as we see it?
Well, it's an interesting one because hopefully one would expect that wisdom and compassion went along with siddhis or powers. In fact, it doesn't necessarily happen that way. And there have been examples like Rasputin, historically, of people who have gained great siddhis or great spiritual powers but did not have compassion.
And or Ravana, the one that...
Ravana, yes,
in
Ramayana.
Ramayana.
I don't think that... I think that if those powers were available without surrendering one's ego or a sense of separateness, they would be misused. And I think the game is beautifully designed that they really aren't available to most people.
And perhaps that's where the acausality comes in. I mean, you cannot really make to order a miracle. A miracle just happens.
Yeah.
There's always that, what Carl Jung used to call synchronous element
exactly.
in the happening of a
exactly.
miracle.
And what's interesting about that is that in the West, when people conceive of people doing miracles, like I watched recently a film on television about Christ, and it was a beautifully done film, an Italian film, and when they showed Christ doing a miracle, he was always somebody who was like, he was about to do the miracle, you know, and then he did the miracle, and you could see him thinking about the miracle. Around Maharaji, I could see that isn't the way it is at all. Miracles just happened around him. He didn't do anything. The whole idea of somebody who does a miracle is exactly our Western projection into it, which is fun to think about.
Exactly. So somehow the causality and the predicament that you have to preserve causality is very much into the mind of these enlightened gurus. They know.
Well, I get a sense that as well as I could try to project in and grasp, that Maharaji was so much in harmony with the laws of the universe, the way form manifested, that there were certain ways in which his powers wouldn't manifest and certain ways they would. They would only manifest within Dharma, within the laws of the that were harmonious, you know.
The difference is that he knew the laws. And
he was the law.
He was the law.
See,
okay.
it's again, the knowing
yes.
is gone too. It's not like he
yes.
said, well, I won't cure that person. Because you'd say, well, why does he cure that person and not that person? You know? And then sometimes he'd give a reason, but the reason always seemed like the reason for the mind of the other person. The reason didn't seem like the reason why he did that. Like there's a story of a man coming, his wife is sick, and he gives him a stick and he says, put it under her pillow. And she gets better, and then they look and the stick is gone, and they come back and they say, Maharaji, where's the stick? And he says, what do you want the stick for? You've got your wife. And then another man says, look, I have an old mother that's sick, give me a stick. And he says, she's old, let her die. Now, under those conditions, he seems to be giving a reason. Old people can die, young people, you know, things like that. But that didn't follow either. I was trying in this book I just did, Miracle of Love, which is just a lot of stories about Maharaji, to convey that you couldn't build any one system. If you said, well, he rationally did this, therefore, and extrapolated out, he would block you at the next moment. Right?
Yeah, and that would be causal behavior, and
then
of course the miracle could not be explained at all.
Exactly.
In fact, if one takes a position like this, and we are, as scientists, are very close to take a position, some of us, that the new paradigm must encompass both the causal element of nature
yeah.
with the acausal element
yeah.
and put both of them in their proper place and say that, well, these are complementary aspects of reality. Reality can manifest itself in causal, what we see and very used to,
yeah.
but also the acausal, which are not used to, but happens all the time. We're just not used to it. We don't perceive them. But perhaps the miracle is not as unusual as we perceive them to be.
No, it feels to me that once you move outside in your awareness of time and space, for example, as your reference point, and then come back into time and space to look, they all seem perfectly natural within another form of law. They don't seem natural when you're trying to use a causal, linear, analytic form to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different place of looking, and then it seems like nothing special. And you could feel from Maharaji that it didn't seem like anything special.